raised at a crucial stage. It's not because of foreign wars we wage. It's more to do with the colors blue and red. Too many laws and too much government. Can you tell me where the Constitution went? The Bill of Rights is just hanging by a thread. So many people trying to cross the border. Politicians build a new world order. Too many minds are convinced they should be led. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the damn. Right, self-defense. They say you're stable, but they don't make sense. Dangerous money will not turn into guns. All the unions always ask for. All you buy is made on foreign shores. Come a day when there'll be real hell to pay. I've gotta be free. Hello and welcome to today's broadcast of Tap Into the Truth. Hope you're having a fantastic day wherever you are and whatever you may be doing, with all the usual caveats, of course. With you as always, I'm your ever so humble host, Tim Tapp, coming to you live from historic Roane County, Tennessee. At least that's if you are here listening live. If you are listening to a rebroadcast on terrestrial radio, or if you're listening in the archives or somewhere to the podcast form, then, of course, you're not hearing me live, but you know that already. However, for your benefit, just in case you need to know, the time of the live broadcast is, of course, September 3rd, 2019, and we're just a few moments after 8 p.m. Eastern Time. So, first of all, thank you for joining me after this wonderful Labor Day weekend that most of us had. And I say most of us because, unfortunately, still splashing about off the coast, we have a huge storm known as Hurricane Dorian. So for those of you who are affected, or those of you who are in the path and yet to be but soon will be affected by this massive major hurricane, thoughts and prayers are with you. And as many other Americans, I stand by to assist when the time comes. So let that be your fair acknowledgement that I, like a lot of other Americans, are ready to make contributions as best we can. Anyway, should be an interesting show. Going to cover a couple of topics, and of course, at the bottom of the hour, I'm scheduled to be joined by Dr. Ken Canfield. He'll be joining us once again, and we'll be discussing National Grandparents Day, which, of course, is upcoming on September the 8th. So about 5 days away from now, it's going to be National Grandparents Day. You know, we hear about Mother's Day. We even hear about Father's Day. We even hear about Children's Day, but how much do you really hear about Grandparents Day? Well, if you listened to the show about the same time last year, you heard Dr. Canfield discuss it with us then. And he's back, and we're going to talk about it some more because grandparents are pretty well overlooked, especially in this age where a lot of grandparents are actually raising children as opposed to getting to be just grandparents. So I look forward to that conversation. In the meanwhile, there's a couple of topics that I would like to hit on before we get too far down into that rabbit hole. So obviously, I'm going to have to push to get them both snuck in. But before I do that, quick shout out to Bigfoot, who has joined me in the chat room. Hey, Bigfoot, glad to see you there. By all means, as I've said several times, and I still mean it, if you haven't done it yet, man, what are you waiting for? Get on over to bigfootsplace.blogspot.com and check out his stuff. You're really going to like it. Trust me on this. All right. So I guess we'll start with the story that managed to work its way into the title. And I'm pretty sure I can sneak whatever else I want to in after that. So we'll get started with the fact that it seems that the Democrats' resident hipster, not hipster as in I want to be hip, but hipster as in I was actually a hippie and still preach hippie mentality mindset, Miss Marianne Williamson, she has made some headlines today. Of course, well, you know, she did it by basically doing what she always does, and that's raise an eyebrow or two when it comes to talking about national policy. You see, she is quite the individual when it comes to believing in the power of love triumphing over evil, in the power of love conquering over the hate of the kicker of puppies and eater of babies, Donald Trump. So she decided that she has a solution now for the problem of this epidemic of gun violence here in the United States. That, of course, mean, well, let's just look at it. The left-wing activist, author, and as I mentioned, Democratic presidential hopeful, Ms. Marianne Williamson, she's got a plan to fight the U.S.'s current gun crisis. That's how she's calling it. Obviously, she didn't get the memo about the focus testing group. It's supposed to be an epidemic of gun violence. But no, she's still going with the old, tried, but true gun crisis. And her plan? Well, it just so happens to include banning bullets and expanding the size of the U.S. federal government. No surprise there. She is running as a Democrat, right? Okay, so the liberal peacenik, known for her plan to harness love to defeat Donald Trump, her new age understanding of America's soulful ache, as Alyssa Milano put it, and, of course, her yodeling, has gained her serious notoriety after the first two Democratic debates. Following the first debate, of course, in Miami back in June, Republicans noted her quirkiness and made a push to get GOP supporters to make $1 donations to Williamson's campaign to help her clear the minimum donors threshold for the second debate in Detroit, hoping that Williamson's presence would embarrass the Democratic Party. With their help, the former spiritual counselor and Oprah Winfrey's qualified for the Motor City Madness in July. Yes, that's right. She was the former spiritual counselor for Oprah Winfrey, in case you missed me saying that the first time. Well, her, you know, uniqueness is how I would put it. Some people call it downright weirdness, but you know what? I just say uniqueness. She's just a little quirky. And, okay, you could use the word weird for folks that don't quite fit into your bubble. But at least her weird, her quirkiness, as I would prefer, at least it's entertaining. And at least, you know, she stands by the convictions. This isn't the first time she's talked about it. This isn't new ideas for her. She believes in this stuff. She believes in the power of healing crystals. She believes in the power of rewriting your aura. She does. So, you know what? At least she's got a positive outlook, generally. So, anyway, it was, in fact, this uniqueness that led her to be the most Googled candidate during the second Democratic debate, as was the same thing with the first Democratic debate. And she's, of course, gained her fame among the far-left reaches of the Democratic Party. However, she failed to qualify for the third debate, which is scheduled to be held on September 12th in Houston. So now it's up to her to get stuff out there to keep her in the headlines. So I think that's what she's done here. So what's this about bullets? You said a little while ago, Tim, I heard you say she's going to ban bullets, and that perked my attention, as well it should. In a Washington Post op-ed titled, "America Doesn't Just Have a Gun Crisis, It Has a Culture Crisis," great title, by the way, which was, of course, published in the wake of the Odessa, Texas shooting, Williamson first offered the usual litany of liberal demands following a mass shooting. You know, blah, 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 universal background checks, blah, 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 close the alleged gun show loophole, blah, 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 get rid of bump stocks, and blah, 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 ban scary-looking semi-automatic rifles that anti-gun politicians and activists have successfully managed to label in the current media litany as assault weapons. Or, if you're more into the focus testing words, weapons of war. Anyway, she added something interesting to her things to ban list, however. She threw bullets in there, saying, quote, "Of course we need universal background checks. We need to close all the loopholes. We need to outlaw bump stocks, and we need to outlaw assault weapons and the bullets needed to shoot them," with emphasis added. So so-called assault weapons do not require special or unique ammunition. The rounds used in those rifles are the same rounds used in normal rifles, if you'll forgive the use of the word normal, as a gun guy, I tend to think semi-automatic rifles fall into the category of normal. But hey, what do I know? I'm just the guy behind the microphone, right? But again, let me say that one more time. She wants to ban the bullets needed to shoot the assault weapons, which are actually the exact same bullets that are needed to fire other non-semi-automatic weapons. Are you following? Are you smelling what I'm cooking here? Are you keeping track? She wants to go so far as to basically ban all bullets, even though, obviously, from her lack of knowledge about firearms, and I'm going to go on a limb and say that she's got a general lack of knowledge about firearms here. She's been too busy healing people through crystals to be out at the gun range. I would recommend she spend some time on the gun range, because you know what? You can get a lot more people healed if you start shooting those crystals at them from 1,000 yards away. Bing, bing, bing. Anyway, that's not a good idea. I'm not seriously suggesting that. I'm going to get some hate mail now. I know. It was a joke, people. Anyway, the words that Williamson wrote and the Post published, well, were those words an error based on a misunderstanding of firearms or an admission of the anti-gun crowd's plan for undermining the Second Amendment rights? Well, right now, no one really knows, because Williamson didn't elaborate and the Post apparently didn't want her to. And so nobody has gotten a chance to get a straight answer from her, at least not yet. Now, she also mentioned the creation of a new federal department. Williamson lamented the state of America's violent culture. And though saying that though nothing that an individual, Americans are not a violent people. She basically said that as individuals, Americans are not violent people. One-on-one, you, by yourself, you're not violent. Well, here's something to keep in mind, Marianne. Typically, when an individual is by themselves, a lot of reason to be violent. And if you got somebody who's being violent without being motivated to do so, then they actually need some of those medications that we're kind of telling folks you should probably stay away from. But she said that U.S. politicians need to stop worrying about symptoms and start getting to the root of the problems. In fact, what she exactly said was, most politicians stick to a discussion of symptoms only. Politicians should be the conduit for our most expanded conversation about social issues. Well, she said societal issues, but, you know, if I'm going to quote directly, societal issues, not the most superficial ones. Conventional politics does not lend itself to a discussion of the deeper issues that plague us. Yet, go deeper we must. America does not just have a gun crisis. It has a cultural crisis. America will not stop experiencing the effects of gun violence until we're ready to face the many ways that our culture is riddled with violence. Yeah, she said that. And you know what? There is a certain amount of truth to what she said. This is part of what makes Marianne somewhat plausible and likable as a candidate, because she's basically what the Democrats have always wanted to be, as long as she stays away from policy too deeply. She says smart-sounding things, and she writes smart-sounding things, and then she also then instantly goes back into the power of love and the healing crystals, and she starts to lose traction. But when she says stuff like this, this actually sounds like it's well thought out. So where is the U.S. riddled with violence? Well, Williamson kind of explains that. Let me go back to the op-ed here, stating our environmental policies are violent towards the earth. Okay, she's already losing me. Our criminal justice system is violent towards people of color. Okay, now she's pandering. Our economic system is violent towards the poor. How exactly? I mean, I'm willing to entertain that notion if you will explain it. Our entertainment media is violent towards women. I guess that's is that a Harvey Weinstein thing, maybe? Or is she just talking about how women are sometimes depicted like in violent movies? I don't know, but they're violent towards women. That's all we need to know. Our video games are violent in their effects on the minds of children. Our military is violent in ways and places where it doesn't have to be. It's the military, Marianne. Literally, its job is to break stuff and kill people, okay? They're blowing stuff up. They're breaking things. They're killing people. If you think you don't need to do those three things, then the military should not be deployed. Anyway, that's still my favorite one, though. Our military is violent in ways and in places where it doesn't have to be. Our media is violent in its knee-jerk shaming and blaming for the sake of a better click rate. Okay, yeah, I can actually get along with that. Our hearts are violent as we abandon each other constantly, breeding desperation and insanity. And our government is indirectly and directly violent in the countless ways it uses its power to help those who do not need help and to withhold support from those who do. Yes, Marianne, generally speaking, the government is corrupt. The government does some crazy things because the government is filled with human beings who they themselves are corrupt. However, if the laws were followed as they were intended and the Constitution was the only guiding principle behind all laws, then that very same situation that you're talking about would occur, but it would occur in a fashion where you understood it. It's not the role of the federal government to pick winners or losers. So that's not an act of violence, and stop talking like you're a college student, Marianne. Anyway, Williamson went on to state that through gun control ideas, well, you know, though gun control ideas are something to work towards, the United States' tendency for brute force rather than diplomacy shows that there's little hope that the current governmental structure can actually provide a solution for violence. For proof, she pointed out that the Pentagon budget vastly outsizes that of the State Department. There are reasons for that, Marianne. But rest assured, though, while she points out in her piece here how terrible that is, Williamson also has a solution. She wants to expand the size of government by creating a new U.S. Department of Peace. Now, yeah, you heard me right, a Department of Peace. We have a State Department. We have a Defense Department. We need a Department of Peace. Among the Department of Peace's responsibilities, as she lays it out, would be to, quote, coordinate and harness the powers of conflict resolution, restorative justice, whatever that means, violence prevention, okay, isn't that what the police are supposed to, trauma-informed education, well, so far just reading this is giving me trauma, mindfulness in the schools, okay, child and family wraparound services. Someone needs to wrap around Marianne's healing crystal and get it back to her because she's really out on a limb here. Social and emotional learning. And I'm not done yet. And a world-class peace academy to train and to deploy thousands of peace builders, plus national conferences and a presidential task force for peace creation. Yes, she did say all this. So what exactly would the Department of Peace do to make these platitudes a reality? Well, as you would suspect with any presidential candidate from either party when throwing out such grandiose ideas, Williamson did not offer any specifics. How much would the Department of Peace cost, you might wonder, if you happen to be one of the 12 remaining fiscal conservatives in the country? Well, also, as you would suspect, Williamson did not offer any cost estimates. Would the Department of Peace impact the deficit and the debt? Even though only about 6 of those remaining 12 fiscal conservatives would probably even think to ask the question. Williamson, of course, did not say whether her proposed new department would increase the annual deficit, which currently is estimated to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $960 billion in 2019 and $12.2 trillion over the next 10 years, you know, if budgetary items stay in place. We know all those things change. That deficit is likely to get larger. She also did not elaborate on how expanding the size of government would impact the federal debt, which is currently more than $22.5 trillion, or as some economists prefer to refer to it, just north of 110% of the GDP. But the important thing to remember is Marianne's got a plan. And in the end, isn't that really all that matters? Oh, my goodness gracious. I got to tell you, I love, absolutely love Marianne Williamson. I do. I really do. She's got the power of her conviction. You know, she believes in it. She's out here trying to heal people. And you know what? The fun part is I honestly believe that she believes that. She thinks creating a Department of Peace is going to make just a world of difference. I myself have my concerns, but hey, what are you going to do? Sit back and watch it. I got funky stuff popping up here on my screen for some reason, so excuse me just a second. Anyway, Bigfoot in the chat room, of course, shared and said, ban bullets and turn your rifle into a billy club. And turn your pistol or revolver into brass knuckles. And I mean, making the very clear point that guess what? Evil actions don't require weapons of mass destruction. They simply require evil intent. And I will say this one more time for the folks that have not yet heard it or who are not remembering it. History has proven time and time again, with guns, there will be tragedy. Without guns, there will be genocide. Between the two, I'd rather deal with tragedies than know that the blood of an entire people are on my hands because I was too stupid to stand up and fight for a God-given right to defend yourself. And firearms are the great equalizer on that playing field. And you can make any arguments that you want to about how, like Joe Biden talking about, we need to ban magazines with the capacity to hold more than one bullet. Once again, showing a complete and total ignorance of firearms, because the whole point of a magazine is to hold more than one round of ammo. I mean, technically, by the standards he's trying to put out, forget even banning magazines. You'd have to ban revolvers, too, because guess what? They're holding, depending on the size of your firearm, anywhere between 3 to 6 rounds. The only thing you're allowed to have now are single-shot weapons. Congratulations, we're back in the late 1700s. How are we going to defend ourselves from the people that are freely exercising their criminality and gaining the best weapons they have available? Never mind, such criminality doesn't really matter, does it? All right, we're at that point of the show where I play for you the Edwards Notebook, and then after that, we'll do the songs and stories for Soldiers Veterans Tip of the Day. Should be getting a new one for September soon, but I have not gotten it yet. So we'll be on the lookout for that. I'll probably get that before the end of this week, I would imagine. So anyway, let's do the Edwards Notebook and then the songs and stories for Soldiers Veterans Tip of the Day. And if all goes well on the other side of that, I'll be joined by my scheduled guest. So stay with us. I'll be right back.
Have the leftists changed their minds concerning religious instruction in government schools? Hello, I'm Ron Edwards. On today's page from the Edwards Notebook, if and when the mere mention of the Ten Commandments or Jesus Christ occurs in government schools, the bigoted leftists go to Nutsville and proclaim it's unconstitutional. However, recently the Freedom of Information Act request has uncovered evidence of a well-orchestrated Islamic campaign aimed at educators in Michigan and several other states. According to a recent report from the Thomas More Law Center, Michigan's Novi Community Schools District conducted a two-day mandatory seminar for teachers presented by a taxpayer-paid Muslim consultant. The teachers were subjected to 2 days of Islamic propaganda, where Islam was glorified, Christianity disparaged, and the USA bashed relentlessly. It was all funded by Novi, Michigan taxpayers, according to Thomas More President and Chief Counsel Richard Thompson. The pro-Islam, anti-Christian seminar was conducted by Dearbornistan, Michigan resident Huda Essa for $5,000 taxpayer dollars. America, the time for believers in Christ and participants in the Jewish faith to fully exercise our unalienable right of free expression is now or never. I'm Ron Edwards. Check out my new website, TheRonEdwards.talkspot.com.
This is Dan Perkins with your songs and stories for soldiers, Veterans Tip of the Day. Did you know that the Vet Center celebrated their 40th anniversary in June? Robert Wilkie, head of the VA, said of the Vet Centers, "The Vet Centers have a long-standing legacy of building trust, fostering community, and providing confidential counseling, outreach, and referral services. Over this 40 years, 300,000 veterans from Vietnam and other wars, have taken advantage of this great program. Many vet centers are participating with Songs and Stories for Soldiers. So here's your veteran's tip of the day. It's not too late to ask for help, and there are over 300 centers across the United States with 80 mobile units. Go to va.gov and look for your nearest vet center. I've been to some of these, and they're safe places to go. Remember, people do want to help you. This has been Dan Perkins with your veteran's tip of the day.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very much for staying with us through that very brief break. And it is now my honor to welcome back to the show once again, Dr. Ken Canfield. Dr. Canfield, of course, you are the president of the National Association for Grandparenting, as well as the author of a fantastic book called The Heart of Grandparenting, which, of course, HEART is an acronym, and we talked a whole lot about that the last time you were on the show, which was roughly about a year ago. It seems like we bring you on just in time to talk about National Grandparents Day while we're still trying to make people aware of it. So I want to thank you so much for coming back and spending some time with us, and how are you this evening?
I am doing well, and I'm proud to announce our 13th grandchild has just, well, she's in process. She's in Korea, our first adopted child through one of our children. And so I'm elated. This adds another sense of depth to our family system, and grandchildren is where the action is. So number 13 is heading this way to the USA.
Well, all right. Well, congratulations on the new addition to the family. I know that if anybody has paid any attention to your career over the years, you take family extremely seriously. You were a father advocate well before you took up the mantle of grandparenting, which was about the time you became a grandparent and understood that, strangely enough, here in the United States, our culture, for whatever reason, just doesn't appropriately value grandparenting. And it's funny you should mention Korea involved, because Korea is one of those great examples of a culture where grandparents are honored greatly. So it's a great contrast there. But let me step back, and for the folks that maybe don't remember your last time on, tell everybody a little bit about your background and what brought you to the battle for recognition for grandparenting and what the real purpose of your work is.
Glad to. First of all, I am committed to the family. We strengthen the family, the neighborhoods, the communities, the states, everything thrives. But what are those things that undercut the family? When I was doing research in the 80s, it was easy to see that fatherlessness just maimed our cities and even our suburbs. And when dads weren't involved, there was a huge gap, a void. Some call it the wound in sons and daughters, that they didn't have a dad who affirmed them, loved them, and really, you know, blessed them in a regular way. Well, as time grew, I'd written about a dozen books and started the National Center for Fathering, which goes on and is in existence today at fathers.com. I became a grandfather. By the way, I was a father, too. Dee and I were happy to have five children. And those children grew up, they married other children, and guess what? Out of nowhere, I had no clue, this grandparenting euphoria is what it is. And grandmothers know it better than anybody else, because they're one of the key leaders in the grandparenting movement. I now see that grandparents in North America have been somewhat displaced. I mean, in 1940, over 42% of the households had a grandparent living with them. And today it's less than 6%. And in fact, it's kind of flipped. We have more grandparents raising grandchildren than ever before. Over 8 million kids under the age of 18 are in full-time custodial care to their grandparents. And, you know, parents go through a divorce, some incarceration. It's just all over the map. So I just see that grandparents have a huge value, and this Grandparenting Sunday coming up this Sunday is a time to celebrate. So that's a bit about my background.
All right. Well, you mentioned the upcoming on the 8th, the National Grandparenting Day. It's still kind of just overlooked, though, in general. And I'm glad that you're out here trying to raise awareness. And like you said, you've dedicated your entire life to the family. And the family is something that I think is kind of falling by the wayside in American culture in particular, Western culture in general, as we've had this major push to be more and more accepting of more non-traditional families, I guess is the best way to put that, and not hurt anybody's feelings. But the process of that is parents, grandparents, familial relationships have been diminished, and it really does show in these young men who are out here involved in mass shootings, for example. There's a huge correlation between the lack of parents in the home and the lack of grandparent connections and just ties to the roots of the family. And that's something that you've really worked to try and help show, to demonstrate how to be more active and proactive in the roles of parenting and in grandparenting, but also to show the value of those ties for everyone and what really comes into play in helping to create a sense of self. When you know where you come from, when you know what your roots are, it's easier to be balanced and feel purpose in your life. Has that been pretty much what you found through your work?
Undeniably, if you have connection to your grandparents and they're healthy, not just physically, but healthy in relationships and see the value of their grandparenting, you are endowing as a grandparent confidence is going to be your legacy in the next generation. And I say two generations away. If you practice blessing those grandchildren, smiling, I've just done some research. I just wrote a piece today on our blog, grandkidsmatter.org. So if you go to grandkidsmatter.org, you can get on a simple weekly email that summarizes tips. But smiling at your grandkids, I tell you, it's good for your health. It is builds interpersonal relationships. It raises endorphins and serotonin. It lowers your blood pressure. Hello. We have got to, and who as a grandparent can't smile? Just that you may say, I had tough kids. Well, and then you see these grandkids be born to your kids and say with a smile, well, I guess you're going to get what I got. Not in a smirky way. I'm just in a joyful way. So that is one of the simple things. And knowing this heritage piece is so critical. We know in genetics, it's very important to know where you came from and what, you know, you inherited. In the same way, socially, relationally, emotionally, even spiritually, it's of great value.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been contending for some time, of course, typically a political-minded show here, but I like to delve underneath the issues, and I've been contending for a long time that the destruction of the family unit's been one of the single biggest causes of the downward spiral of our society. And I don't think there's any question that the stronger all these connections are, the better the families are. I mean, the more self-worth that you have that is based on knowing and learning from your family, the stronger your character is going to be, and the more self-sufficient you're going to be, which makes you less susceptible to a lot of the negative forces out there in the world.
Undeniably. And you know, let's put some numbers on this. Let's start with fatherlessness. Okay, that's a culprit that is stealing the vitality of young men and women, boys and girls. The annual out-of-pocket cost of fatherlessness, and that's aid to dependent children, that's all the things that go in to that, is well over $100 billion. When you look at what the contribution that grandparents make within the family system and value that, you can have actuaries look at it. That again is multiple billions of dollars. So it is an economic reality that we are as Americans focused on the physical stuff. What I believe is going to be the currency of the future is relational, it's moral, it's ethical, it's emotional. And so grandparents, you don't have to have a lot of cash. You don't have to have, you know, homes in two or three places, or even another home. It's not bad if you do. Don't misunderstand me. But what you can do is build in those emotional and relational segments to create a family that has heritage and depth and meaning and purpose and ethics. And gosh, we need that, a renewal of family. And so Grandparents Day, we're going to celebrate grandparents this Sunday.
Absolutely. Just for general purposes, obviously the organization has continued to grow. You're reaching out in new ways. What are some of the most encouraging things that you've seen since the last time you were here, which is roughly about a year ago, going on with the National Organization for Grandparenting?
Well, I'd say two things. I think just this grandparents raising grandchildren, we're seeing more grandparents stepping up. Now, I am not saying you need to adopt your children if marriages fall apart or this grandchildren if those things happen. But you ask grandparents who really do that and tell me that's heavy lifting. You've already raised one generation and you're thinking, hey, I'm much older and being involved. Those grandparents, even though it's exhausting, would say and have said in interviews that I've done, I would do it again without a thought tomorrow. I think what we are seeing is an awakening. As I said in other places, cruises are great, trips abroad are fine. All of those things are just monumental events. But the thing that supersedes that is what sort of legacy are you leaving? A track that your grandchildren will have, and get this, as much as 15 to 18% of our life will live as great grandparents. About 30% of our life will live as grandparents. So the life expectancy gives us much more opportunity to use our thoughtful experience, that is, our successes and our failures, to teach forthcoming generations what family and life and community is all about.
All right. Well, you've also tacked on as part of the outreach podcast known as Grands Matter. Tell us a little about the podcast and the kind of information that you are sharing there.
Well, a couple of things. And we have grown. We grow about 20-25% a year. And, you know, we reach probably about 1 million grandparents, but that's a thimbleful compared to the 80 million grandparents in North America, so in the U.S. and Canada. So at present, you can go to Grandkids Matter, because they do, grandkidsmatter.org, and we have a bunch of articles that relate to research, ideas, strategies, from everything from educational ways to enhance your grandchildren's opportunities vocationally, to stuff like estrangement, because, you know, when you're of the age of being a grandparent, you're looking back and thinking, well, is there any estrangement or any reconciliation I need to do in my family? And for many listeners right now, they'd love to be with their grandkids, but for whatever reason, they aren't. They're not allowed. And you're thinking, that's crazy. Well, how do you cope and live in an environment where that is the case? So we offer that. We have a simple one-minute radio broadcast that's syndicated at grandkidsmatter.org. And we believe in due time that Grandparents Day will rise in importance and will recognize what we need to do in honoring and respecting the heritage. And if you don't have a grandparent, find an elder to make sure that your kids have, you know, that connection generationally. It's going to be healthy for them and beneficial for you.
All right. Well, I was about to wrap things down, but Doctor, we have a caller on the line that would like to ask a question. So would you be all right with staying on with us just a little bit longer and hear the caller out?
Sure would.
All right. We've got area code from Virginia. That's 804. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Good evening. I just came upon your show. I'm absolutely delighted and would like to help Dr. Canfield with his work. I actually am a global visionary, and I'm my last name has global recognition. I'm looking to feed people body, mind, and spirit to get this country back on track. I am a grandparent. I'm going to turn 75 this month, and I am in the veterans healthcare system since 2008, and I'm limited to getting out and about, but I'm changing the world from my dining room table, and that's a choice that I'm making, and standing in truth and light, and that's what we need to show these generations to come how to empower themselves in the right way and not get caught up in the corruption that's been so rampant since the beginning of time. So I'd love to share my name. I don't do email or texting. If you can give Dr. Canfield my number, but there is a big website. I even share common background with President Trump. I'm looking to help him get the country back on track, but I know he's on his own path. I'm on mine, and I don't agree with some of the things that are happening with trade wars. That's all paradigm based on control and corruption, but there are technologies aren't being utilized properly, and that's where grandparents can really have an exciting life, just interacting with their grandchildren, even doing entrepreneurial ventures around the dining room table that will transform global economics globally, too.
All right. Well, Dr. Canfield does have some information that you can use to reach out through the website if that was the best route to go.
I don't do email or texting. I stay in a very creative mode. If you can just share my number with them, and I have a business partner who's...
As far as that's concerned, I suppose I can forward that to him. If you don't want to give that on air, I can get that from you a little later.
Sure. I've been on plenty of blog talk shows, too. Yes, I'll be very happy. My name is Hugh, H-U-G-H. The last name, Trawlson, is spelled T like Tom, R-A-U-L-S-E-N like Nancy. My phone number is area code 804-798-1139. You can just put my name on YouTube or Google. It will bring up all kinds of interviews and websites. And I'm wondering if he's related at all to Jack Canfield.
I am not. We share the same last name. I'm sure we are, but I've been in the same city where he has been speaking, me on family, he on chicken soup for everything. He's a phenomenal guy. But
I'm born the same year, 1944, and he has a golden motorcycle gang. I'm sort of a loner, a truth warrior, but I was interviewed by one of the people in the Transformational Leadership Council, Dame Nicole Brandon, who's actually my muse. What a fantastic human being, and I think if we can connect with her a little bit too, or just make people aware, there's a lot of role models out there that can be mentors to thousands upon thousands of people with the internet. The internet's not being utilized to the full function. It's like the Wild West right now, but it can be tamed. And if people stop fighting and arguing with one another, I'm trying to shift the whole presidential election to tell candidates and voters that nobody ever wins an argument. But instead of doing that, go into your heart and bring forth a solution with respect into the communities, into the states, into the country, and for the whole world. That will tamp down the chaos and manifest a better present and future. So I'll let you continue with ending the show, but I thank you for bringing me on, and it's people helping people helping people. That's what I say we all incarnate from spirit. We're going to go back into spirit where the material goods have absolutely no use, and I do say we're fully accountable for everything we do here. I believe we incarnate to learn unconditional love. As we learn it, we're supposed to be a blessing to others, especially those who can't help themselves.
All right. Well, thank you very much for calling, Hugh. We certainly appreciate it. And I'm sure Dr. Canfield is very pleased that you're interested in doing the exact same thing in mentoring. Doctor, thank you so much for being with us tonight. As always, I greatly appreciate it. Please, one more time before you go, share all the websites that are pertinent. And if you're inviting people to follow you on social media, please feel free to share that as well.
Glad to. Well, first of all, I would like to honor grandmothers and grandfathers who are going the extra mile, who are listening right now. You are indeed true American heroes. And I'm thinking of those that are caring for grandchildren, not just custodially, but in a way that is going to be helpful in your investing. And this Sunday, I want to celebrate you, and I just am grateful. My grandparents were deeply involved in my life, and I am seeking to do the same with our grandchildren. And secondly, you can reach me in two places. First, the National Association for Grandparenting is grandkidsmatter.org, grandkidsmatter.org. And we've got great tips, ideas, and helps there. If you are concerned about fathering and the need to strengthen fathers, you can go to fathers.com, just simply fathers.com. We have a different email there to help dads curb the scourge of fatherlessness and just be the best dads they can be. And it's always a delight to be on your show, so we'll talk again next year, maybe not even a year, maybe the next Father's Day as we celebrate dads.
Yeah, I definitely would like to make it a little more frequent. I always enjoy the conversations. Again, thank you so much, Doctor. And as I said last time, keep up the good work, sir.
Thank you.
All right. God bless. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Ken Canfield. And, of course, if you are here at the home platform of BTR, there is a link to the National Association for Grandparenting in the show description. And from there, you can also find things like the podcast, Grands Matter, and everything else they're doing. So please, by all means, if you are even the least bit interested and you have the opportunity, you really should go and check that out. They're doing some great work there. And, you know, what else can I say? They're doing great work. Yeah, it's good stuff, but it's important stuff. Now, he's more of a nice guy, so don't want to hammer heavy and hard on all the political aspects. But I did point out during the conversation, there's no question, and Vorp in the chat room has also been making it clear that, you know, when it comes to the socialist, it's part of the intent. When it comes to the leftist, it's part of the intent to destroy the family. Fathers out of the equation, and it's difficult. It's difficult for young men to learn to be men. It's hard for them to learn to control themselves. And that explains a lot of what we see in the streets now. When you take fathers out of the home, it's hard for young girls to grow up and know what to expect. You know, when it comes to being respected and respecting yourself and your body and what young men should be doing as forms of respect to you as you grow up, as you date. And we've seen the results of that. Fathers in the home make a big difference, and grandparents being connected and active in these family units, also something we've seen a lot less of. Vitally important. So yes, the leftists, the globalists, they want to destroy the family unit, and we have been seeing the results of that. So it is good to see somebody coming from a non-political standpoint, and that's what Dr. Canfield does. He approaches from a non-political standpoint, so he's a little timid for the usual guest here, because normally we have a little bit of a political bite from the guest as well. I'm okay with somebody taking a non-political link because it's way more difficult for the political talking heads to even attack what he has to say in that circumstance. So, again, I certainly appreciate Dr. Canfield coming on. And maybe we can get Ken on a little more frequently than just Father's Day and Grandparents' Day, which, again, I'll remind you, is this upcoming Sunday. So go enjoy Grandparents' Day. Anyway, real quick, going to try and sneak this in before the end of the show. I haven't left myself very much time, but I can't let this broadcast go without bringing it up. We've got faculty members at Kansas University that want Chick-fil-A thrown off campus. Why? Well, because Chick-fil-A is, of course, a bastion of bigotry. And we've heard it before. Ever since the founder of Chick-fil-A made the terrible, terrible PC faux pas of saying that as a Christian, he believes in the biblical definition of marriage. That's all he said. Didn't say anything else. Didn't say, them gays shouldn't ought to get married. Didn't say, them there transgenders got mental illness. Didn't say a lot of things that he could have been and still would have been within the realm of the Christian worldview. Not to mention, generally, reality. He didn't say anything like that. He just said that he believed in the biblical definition of marriage. That's it. Since then, Chick-fil-A is a bastion of bigotry. Well, evidently, at Kansas University, some of the faculty members are calling Chick-fil-A a bastion of bigotry and are fighting against allowing America's most popular fast food chain to move from a campus basement to the school's main student center, as well as to sponsor the, quote, Chick-fil-A coin toss for every home football game. The fast food chain has operated for 15 years in the basement of KU's Wesco Hall. Now, members of the Sexuality and Gender Diversity Faculty and Staff Council, they wrote a letter to the university stating, quote, in the spring, we spoke out to denounce the decision to relocate the business, which has a history of supporting organizations that are hostile to lesbians, gays, bisexual, transgenders, and queer families and communities. Now, the letter named Exodus International, which supports so-called conversion therapy, along with the Family Research Council, which, of course, the letter cited as Southern Poverty Law Center, calling them a hate group. We all know Southern Poverty Law Center is just calling everything right down the middle, don't they? They don't have a political agenda. And the only thing that surprised me at this point, makes me think I need to step up my game, is the fact that my name hasn't appeared on their list of hate groups. Well, the bottom line is these folks don't like the idea that Chick-fil-A is actually getting to move out of the basement of one location and into a prime student center on the other. They've been operating on the campus for 15 years. They are a staple on the campus. And the fact that these folks aren't willing to permit the, let's call it something, I don't know, what's a good word? Diversity. They don't want to allow the diversity of thought brought forth by the Christian values that are shining through to the business practices and the business model of Chick-fil-A. Personally, if I was Chick-fil-A and this is how they wanted to treat me, I would just move off campus altogether. But to their credit, they don't want to leave behind the young minds of the folks that are working to get their education on campus. That's going to have to be it for me tonight. I want to thank each and every one of you guys for being here. Thank you so much, Bigfoot. Check out his stuff over at bigfootsplace.blogspot.com. I want to definitely thank Dr. Ken Canfield for joining us on air. Remember to check out all of his stuff. Definitely want to thank Vorpalbyte for hanging out with us a little late into the chat room, but made it in plenty of time to hear most of the interview and to definitely be active in the chat room and bring some heavy truth there as well. And thanks to Hugh for calling in and contributing and wanting to help to change the hearts and minds of our youth and utilize technology to do that. As I always like to say at the end of each and every broadcast, let me issue this challenge. And the challenge is a simple one. I'm challenging you to not take my word for anything that I say on this show. No, don't take my word for it. But definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Don't listen to the other guys either. I mean, well, listen to them, but don't just take them at their word. Get out there, do your own research, and most importantly, use your brain if you really want to tap into the truth. That's it for me for tonight, folks, and hope I'll see you again tomorrow night. In the meanwhile, be good to each other, and we'll do it again.
Using both hands. Founders knew the Second Amendment was the final one to keep, to hold our other rights intact so we'd never become sheep. Stalin, Hitler, Mao Amin, and Pol Pot, they told us things that you never forgot. Is using both hands. Well, I prefer the 308 to the tiny 223. It gives me more than 1,000 yards to protect my family.
Using both hands.